Buddha's focus was always upon understanding. This word, panya, penetrating insight, penetrating understanding. That understanding is the means to bringing struggle and anguish to an end. That understanding is the means of dispelling confusion and struggle. That understanding is really the pathway of awakening. And in the service of that understanding, the Buddha put forward a number of different, described a number of different processes for both the construction of struggle and sorrow and anguish, and indeed also sitting alongside the processes of bringing suffering and struggle and anguish to an end. And one of the formulas that the Buddha put forward for understanding how our world of the moment is constructed and how our sense of self of the moment is constructed goes something like this. Says what we contact, we feel. What we feel, we perceive. What we perceive, we proliferate about. What we proliferate about, we dwell upon. What we dwell upon becomes the shape of our mind. The shape of our mind is implicated in forming both the shape of our world and the shape of ourself at the moment. This is a process, I think. It's not an abstract theory. First of all, it's a process that often happens incredibly quickly. That we often find ourselves really at the tail end of this, when we're suddenly aware, I am, or my world is like this. And the Buddha suggested that the more we can begin to slow this process down, that there's not anything in it which is predetermined. There's nothing in it which is fatalistic. That the more we can begin to slow this process down, the more we can discover, of course, that there are choices. Now, we don't have choices about contact. That's the nature of being an alive human being. Our eyes are operating, our ears are operating. You know, all of our sense doors are operating in a world of sensory experience. So we don't have a choice about contact. Sensory impressions come with feelings. Some are pleasant, some are unpleasant. Some are neither pleasant nor unpleasant. This also is not a sort of ethical judgment. It is just the way things are. Perception, we perceive. We place names, markers, designations upon what comes through our sense doors. It's now a glass, you know, it's now a chair, it's now you. You know, it now has a name. Now, perception, of course, is not innocent. Perception and memory are running down the same neural pathways. So our names, our designations, our markers, they are opening up the doorway to a world of association, to how I've heard that sound in the past. You know, how I've seen you, my associations with you as I've seen you in the past. So perception is bringing forth this world of association. And this is where we begin often to get into trouble. Because not only is perception running down memory lane in terms of past experience, it's running down memory lane in terms of past reactions. What I like, what I don't like, what I think is good, what I think is bad, what I think is lovely, what I think is terrible. this is what is starting to trigger the proliferation. We remember, we think about, we dwell upon, we have a lot of thoughts, we start to build a narrative about what is being experienced. We start to dwell upon it and we see it becoming the shape of our mind. And the shape of our mind basically becomes the shape of our world and becomes the shape of ourself. So we're learning to bring more pauses into those moments when proliferation is starting to draw on those associated emotional reactions, fears, anxieties, hopes, longings, starting to be mindful, you know, bringing mindfulness into those moments, bringing questioning into those moments. The mind does not automatically take on that shape. It does not necessarily give so much credibility to that world of association. It brings more questioning in. It's less prone to seize upon the fragment of an experience based upon an association and mistake it to be the whole. You know, this is very trackable in experience. This is very traceable in experience. You know, I walk outside, I hear a sound. The memory bank kicks in with the perception, oh, it's an airplane. And it's a plane. Okay. Some ways that seems quite benign. I remember the last time I went on a flight, you know, and I was going somewhere and I'd like to go back there, you know, and, you know, here I'm going to start making my plans for going back there, you know. I'm starting to get into some agitation about how I'm going to rearrange my life in order to get back there, you know, and, you know, in my mind I'm already kind of on that plane and I'm certainly out of here, but I have become someone. It's very trackable, very traceable in our experience. And learning to slow this down is beginning really to not be so tricked. Sometimes the Buddha just likened this to a magic show. He said, you know, like if you went to a magician show and you sit in the audience and your mouth hangs open in astonishment at all of these remarkable disappearing acts and appearing acts and rabbits coming out of nowhere, you know. And you sit there and you think, oh, you know, it's all so astonishing. We're sort of enchanted by it all. And then he says, if you went backstage, you know, and you saw the wires and you saw the trapdoors and, you know, suddenly you're not so tricked anymore into thinking, oh, that's how it is. It's not, of course, about taking the wonder out of life or the awe out of life. But it's not of being so hooked, so entangled in the constructions based upon our understanding of how it all works. Of how it all works. So, you might just have some opportunities to track this in your experience. One or two today. Uh-huh. So, I'd suggest that we take half an hour for a walking period and then come back for Dharma talk this afternoon. You know, I think there is a great deal of value without getting over busy, but to begin every meditation session, whether it's a walking or a sitting period, with actually a sense of intention. And of course, it's often a very fine line between setting those intentions and having a project, which I don't actually think is overly helpful. But intentionality is so much the forerunner of all things developing, all things deepening, all things being cultivated. And, you know, there's always, I think, that place in practice of, you know, bringing, not wanting to over-effort, not wanting to over-stride, not wanting to overdo, and yet to also at the same time to have a very clear sense that this practice does have a sense of direction.
You know, it's a little bit more than just being with what is. And it's certainly a lot more than just being present. It's considerably more than just being present. It actually has a sense of direction. And I think intention particularly plays a very crucial part in the whole development of investigation. You know, asking the questions that matter. Asking the questions that lead to understanding. And asking the questions that begin to sort of take us out of the realm of the habitual, you know, the automatic. And quite frankly, we can be as much on automatic pilot sitting and walking as we can anywhere else in our lives. So it's good to dispel that idea that somehow just closing my eyes I'm engaged in some noble quest. Not necessarily so. It's helpful, it's a good thing, it's great, but it's not necessary, but it can be automatic. So intentions can be so variable, you know, and again it's not that there's a right one, but you know, the way that I'm using intention is this kind of doorway into some quality of investigation. For example, going into a walking period. We could go into the walking period just with the intention to notice when mindfulness turns to forgetfulness and when forgetfulness returns to mindfulness. And when mindfulness turns to forgetfulness, we start to become increasingly aware of, you know, some of those very familiar habits, those familiar patterns that trigger a kind of heedlessness or unconsciousness. And of course, this is not inviting judgment, it's not inviting blame, but actually the more familiar we are with the landscape, the more possibility do we have of walking new pathways, rather than the habitual. So that can be a useful one in a walking period, just noticing those transitions. Mindfulness, forgetfulness. You know, forgetfulness, mindfulness. What is actually triggering those shifts? Okay, so then if we come back at around 3:10 for the...